Picture this. It's 1934, Ann Arbor, University of Michigan versus Georgia Tech football.
It was an enormous story in 1934 when the game happened, and it caused a firestorm on campus.
And that firestorm, it's not just about a friendly team rivalry. The University of Michigan's athletic director, Fielding Yost, benched the team's best player, Willis Ward. Not because of an injury or anything Ward did, but because Willis Ward was black, the only black player on the team. Today, a more insidious side of the U of M's football history. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. In this moment of racial reckoning, we're re-examining every sector of society, including sports. And it's partly why the University of Michigan versus Georgia Tech game is getting a second look today. In fact, an advisory committee to the University of Michigan is recommending that the name Fielding Yost be removed from Yost Arena. They're saying that the legendary football coach and AD committed racist offenses against his own players. It's a big deal. Here to explain more is Buddy Morehouse. He's a former newspaper editor and made a film documentary about Willis Ward called Black and Blue, the story of Gerald Ford, Willis Ward, and the 1934 Michigan-Georgia Tech football game. Buddy, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, April. Great to be here.
From what you've been able to learn, what happened between Fielding Yost and Willis Ward that the committee felt was most egregious?
Well, Willis Ward, as you said, was a football player and a track star at the University of Michigan in the early 1930s. He grew up in Detroit, graduated from Detroit Northwestern, and at the time he graduated, he was one of the best high school athletes in the country. He came to Michigan with the understanding that he would be able to both run track and play football there, even though Michigan had not had an African-American football player in more than 30 years. And when he came to Michigan, Fielding Yost was not the coach. He was the athletic director. The coach was a man named Harry Kipke. And when Willis Ward came to Ann Arbor that year, it was with the understanding he'd be able to run track and play football. And everything went just fine for the first 3 years he was at Michigan. But when he was a senior, Michigan scheduled a game against Georgia Tech. And back then, there was a terrible Jim Crow practice that said that teams from the South would refuse to play against any team from the North if the team from the North had an African-American player. So they would insist that that player be benched for that game, and then the team from the South would bench a player of equal ability to keep things fair, you know, to keep things fair on the field, supposedly.
Right.
So that's exactly what happened in 1934. Fielding Yost arranged the game with Georgia Tech. They said the only way we're going to play is if you bench Willis Ward.
Where was the game supposed to be held? Was it in Michigan or in Georgia?
It was in Michigan. It was at Michigan Stadium.
I mean, part of me wondered when I first heard about this, is there a possibility that Fielding Yost might have thought, well, if we go down there, you know, my player might be at risk from racist attacks for violence. But this was a game on the home field.
And there was never any question that the game was going to take place in Ann Arbor. Michigan had an opening on their schedule that year. So the year before that, Fielding Yost had been looking around for an opponent to fill that gap in their schedule. And he wanted to play a team from the South. So he contacted Georgia Tech and they arranged the game. There was never any question that the game was going to be played in Ann Arbor. And so the game was scheduled for 1934. Georgia Tech said that the only way they would play the game is if Willis Ward would be benched. And at that time, he was Michigan's best player, along with probably his best friend on the team, Gerald Ford. And it was up to Fielding Yost to make the decision about whether or not Ward would be benched or whether they would just cancel the game or insist that he play. And Fielding Yost made the decision that Ward would be not only benched for the game, but that he wouldn't even be allowed in the stadium that day.
What do we know about how Willis Ward felt about this decision?
He was embarrassed. He was humiliated by what happened. He was also very heartened by the response from his teammates, especially Gerald Ford. Ford actually said that he was going to quit the team in response to it. And Willis Ward told him that, no, this is not a battle that you have. This is a battle that they have with me. You need to go out and play, and you need to win the game. and you need to do it for the team and for me. And so that's what Gerald Ford did. So Ward was very heartened by the response from his teammates at the time, but the incident had such a profound impact on him that the next year was the Olympics in Berlin in 1936, where Jesse Owens won 4 gold medals. And Willis Ward at the time was just as fast as Jesse Owens. He was an incredible track athlete, and there was no question that he would have also won gold medals that year. But he was so disheartened by what had happened in 1935 with the Georgia Tech game that he decided he was going to quit sports altogether. And he never competed in the Olympics and never competed in another sporting event after that.
Mm. In the course of your research, what did you learn about Fielding Yost's views on race that might inform the decision that he made?
He was the son of a Confederate soldier. He grew up in West Virginia. His father was, he had served under Robert E. Lee. He was a physician in the Confederate Army. So he came from the South, and he brought a lot of those values with him when he came into the North, into Michigan. There was no question that he wanted his football teams to remain all white. He became Michigan's football coach in 1901, and he was there for 20-some years before becoming athletic director. And the entire time that he was there, there was never an African-American football player on Michigan's team. Now, there were in other sports, in track and in baseball particularly. Michigan had a number of outstanding African-American athletes, but never in football. But it was really the incident in 1934 with Willis Ward where this kind of all came out.
It sounds like what happened around the decision really started a ripple effect throughout the Michigan student body. Can you tell us about what happened as word of this started spreading?
It was an enormous story in 1934 when the game happened, and it caused a firestorm on campus. In the weeks leading up to the game, Michigan never actually came out and said that Willis Ward was going to be benched, but there was this rumor going around that that was going to happen, and everybody knew that the only way Georgia Tech would play the game is if Ward was benched. So Michigan started getting inundated with telegrams and letters and postcards and phone calls from all over the country, from Michigan alumni primarily, and most all of them said that there's no way that this is not what Michigan is. There's no way that Michigan should play this game if Willis Ward is benched. And we had a lot of them in our movie Black and Blue, a lot of these cards and letters and telegrams that came in. And then the week of the game, there were a lot of protests on campus, and the night before the game, there was a huge rally that took place on campus, and it was a lot of people in support of benching Willis Ward, because these were mostly like the frat boys and some of those groups that were in support of benching Willis Ward. They said that these are our guests from the South, and we need to respect them and their traditions. And then there were a lot more people, including most of the faculty at Michigan, who said that, you know, no, this is just an outrage. There's no way that Willis Ward should be benched. But it was not a quiet thing at all when it happened in 1934. It was an enormous event on campus.
So what was Fielding Yost's reaction to all this backlash?
His reaction at that time was he did not publicly say a word. We know that there were a lot of things going on behind the scenes. The group that was in charge of Michigan athletics back then was the Board in Control of Intercollegiate Athletics, and they held a meeting leading up to the game, and everyone at that time knew that Yost had made the decision that Ward was going to be benched. They held a meeting leading up to it, and we have the minutes of that meeting where everyone had their say, and basically that's at the time when Yost said that we need to not publicly say anything. If Willis Ward says something, that's fine, but we're not going to say anything. We're just going to do this. We're just going to let this happen. So for the rest of his life, Fielding Yost never publicly said anything about it.
We need to take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation about this shady corner of the U of M's football past.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
If Fielding Yost was willing to do this to Willis Ward, to take him out of the picture so that Michigan could play Georgia Tech, I mean, why did he even have Willis on the team at all? I understand that Willis came into the program at a time when Yost maybe wouldn't have had any say in it. But I guess how did things get to this point even?
Well, there are a lot of people who think that he never wanted Willis Ward on the team to begin with, and that it was Harry Kipke, his coach, who fought for him to be on the team. Yost, of course, never publicly said anything one way or another, but there are a lot of people who believe that he never wanted Ward on the team to begin with, and that all kind of came to a head in the Georgia Tech incident. He really viewed his football team differently than the other sports on campus. He had no problem with African Americans on the track team or the baseball team or some of the other sports, but football, he just, for whatever reason, because that was his sport, he wanted that to remain all white.
His defenders, I guess, although they may not approve of what he did, people who disagree with the decision to remove his name sometimes say that this was a time in which segregation was just embedded in American culture in so many ways that it's not really fair to apply the modern standard to what happened back then. Whether or not you agree with it, I wonder if you can put that in the context of the times. It certainly sounds like there were people at the time who saw this, you know, as really deeply problematic and said so.
Exactly. I have a lot of problems with the way this commission went about this whole process, but I think that the thing that they did get right in there is that they did point out that it's not like everybody at Michigan felt the same way about this, as you said. There were a lot of people, most of the students, almost all of his teammates, the faculty on there, all the alumni, who were vehemently opposed to this, vehemently opposed to him being benched. There were some people who were also in agreement with it, but it's not like everybody back then felt the same way and that this was just the culture in Michigan at the time, because that's not at all the case. This was not a case where everybody had the same opinion back then.
Yeah. You know, our society has come up with a couple of different, I'd say, newer processes for thinking about American history as we've reexamined things like Confederate memorials or other people in American history and in Michigan history who espoused views that now we find, you know, really unacceptable. Sometimes people say, take them down, change the names, move forward. These are not idols that we want to hold up to our children and future generations. There are some people who say, you know what, leave it there, but let's provide some context. Could you see that happening in this case? Is there a way to hold, you know, different perceptions in balance and help people understand what was going on in 1934?
That's one of the recommendations that this commission put forth that I totally agree with, is that they say that whatever we do with Fielding Yost on campus in the future, we need to make sure that we tell the story of Willis Ward alongside that. If we're going to keep Yost's name on the building, then there needs to be a plaque in there that talks all about Willis Ward as well. And I'm totally in favor of that. Anything that we can do to get out the story of Willis Ward is a good thing, in my opinion. Willis Ward is somebody I never had the opportunity to meet when he was alive. He died in 1983, but he is one of my heroes. The way he lived his life, not just his time at Michigan, but the things that he did after that, he's one of the most incredible people we have ever had in this state, not just as an athlete, but as a person. So anything that we can do to get the story of Willis Ward out there is a good thing, in my opinion.
Can you tell us a little more about the later years of Willis Ward's life?
Yeah, he was an incredible person. And one of the things I always keep in mind when I'm thinking about Willis Ward is that he never let what happened in 1934 define him or hold him back at all. When he graduated from Michigan, he got a job right away working for the Ford Motor Company. Henry Ford himself was a huge Willis Ward fan, and he hired Willis Ward to be kind of an unofficial civil rights liaison within his company.
Wait. Henry Ford, who was known to not exactly have generous views of equality of all men and women.
Exactly. He loved Willis Ward, though.
That's
fascinating. He also knew that the only way his auto factories in Detroit were going to be successful is if they were able to have a number of African-American employees. My understanding of it is that there were a lot of tensions back then between management and the workers. So he hired Willis Ward to kind of be a liaison between the black workers and the management at the Ford Motor Company. So he's one of the highest-ranking African-American executives in America at the time, and he's in his early 20s. Then he was extremely successful in that job, but he wanted to go to law school because he wanted to become a civil rights attorney and hopefully a judge. And Henry Ford begged him to stay at the company. He said he would give him twice as much money as any legal firm ever would, but Ward wanted to become an attorney. So he went to law school. He graduated from there. He got a job in the prosecutor's office prosecuting civil rights cases. He later went on to become the chairman of the Michigan Public Service Commission. And then he was, in the early 1960s, he was appointed as Wayne County's first African-American probate court judge by Governor Romney. And the person who lobbied him to appoint Ward to that position was Gerald Ford, who was at that time a congressman. And then he served in that position. He was a probate court judge in Wayne County for the rest of his life until he died in 1983.
What are your reservations about how the committee approached the issue of Fielding Yost and his place in Michigan history?
The big problem that I have with the way they went about this is that they essentially tried and convicted Fielding Yost without calling any witnesses at all. The first time that anybody outside of this panel knew about this commission and this report and this recommendation was yesterday when it became public. And the one that really upsets and offends me is that Willis Ward's own family never knew about this, that this was happening. They were never asked for their input. They were never asked for their perspective on anything. They didn't even know that this was happening until it came out yesterday. So I think Michigan did a really poor job of bringing other people into the conversation. They also did not include any Michigan football historians. There are a couple people, John U. Bacon and Greg Dooley, who know the story of Fielding Yost better than anyone. There's a history professor named Tyron Stewart, who we interviewed in our film, Black and Blue, who knows the story of Willis Ward better than anyone. And none of those people were even told that this was happening. So I think that they would have benefited by having more perspectives and more voices, particularly Willis Ward's family.
Buddy Morehouse is the maker of the film Black and Blue, the story of Gerald Ford, Willis Ward, and the 1934 Michigan-Georgia Tech football game. Buddy, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, April.
We reached out to the University of Michigan for comment. While representatives for the U of M did not weigh in on the recommendation, they say, quoting here, in 2020, multiple requests to remove the honorific name of Fielding H. Yost from the ICE arena were received and referred to the President's Advisory Committee on University History for review pursuant to our established process in such cases. The committee's preliminary recommendation comes after a year of study by the panel of university historians. You can read a full version of the statement at our website. And just a reminder, the University of Michigan holds Michigan Radio's broadcast license. And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside shows at michiganradio.org for streaming. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Ishikawa. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. We're going to take Monday off, but we'll see you back next Tuesday.